Hey everybody, before we get started, I want to say, hey, you know, it's Valentine's Day coming up. We're going to do a little contest with World Soccer Shop. Here's the deal. Last year, we asked you to make like a homemade Valentine's Day card, and that was really fun, but it was a lot of effort. Like I sat down and cut out some, some colored paper and got the crayons out and made a little card for my favorite player, Luis Suarez. And this year, we're going to make it a little easier to participate. We just want you to send a poem somehow on social media with the hashtag Howler V card. So, you know, hashtag Howler V card through Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, and just write a little poem to your favorite soccer player or coach or whoever. And to get you started, we have come up with a couple. You could do something like roses are red, violets are blue, Chelsea's unbeaten since firing Moo. That would work. You could do roses are red, violets are blue, Eric Cantona played soccer and sometimes kung fu. You know, you could go pretty much anywhere with these. You don't even have to do like a roses are red construction. It's just sort of easy. You might get the creative brainwaves waving. So I want you to go and give some thought to this. It doesn't have to be great. But here's the other part of this. Contest. Well, a couple things. First, the prize, there's a prize. There are two prizes. Actually, there are four prizes. Two people will win. And World Soccer Shop, which is one of our wonderful advertisers, they've been with us for many issues now, and we really love World Soccer Shop. They are donating two sets of jerseys, a his and hers set of jerseys, or it could be a his and his set of jerseys, or a hers and hers set of jerseys, or whatever. Like, if you love somebody and you want to win them a jersey, all you got to do is write a love poem about soccer and send it to us with the hashtag HowlerVCard through your favorite social media channel. And we are going to select the winners. We're going to select the top five, our favorite five, and on Monday morning in the Goalmouth email, which we send out every weekday morning, Brooks Peck of Dirty Tackle writes it for us. We're going to provide our favorite five poems, and we're going to ask the people who receive it to vote on their favorite poem. So the top two winners there are going to win these sets of jerseys, and you can totally stack the odds in your favor by getting all of your friends to sign up for the Goalmouth email. You go to howlermagazine.com, you scroll down a little ways on the right side, there's a little place to put in your email address. Go there and it will send you a confirmation email, and subscribe to the Goalmouth email, and you won't regret it. It's very funny, and you will also have a chance to win these prizes thanks to World Soccer Shop. I'm going to leave you with one more before we get started on the show today. And his little hint about what we have coming up. I'm here today. Goldblatt is too. Warshaw is still traveling, and we miss Carbassioun. Hello and welcome to Dummy, a weekly conversation among editors and friends of Howler magazine. My name is George Croatia. I'm the editor of Howler. I'm in Tampa, Florida. David Goldblatt, good friend of the podcast, is here. He's in Southern California, which is what percent better than Bristol in terms of weather, David?
Well, with the usual hyperbole of effort that players put in, I'd say at least 110%.
At least. Possibly 200%.
I have heard 200% on occasion, and I think in Southern California we could be reaching that limit.
I'm going to be looking for some rad, I want you to inject some of that surfer talk into this. Well, I should have told you that before now.
The crazy thing is, of course, is that I'm 60 miles from the ocean.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in Los Angeles, but it's 60 miles to Santa Monica. So, you know, the surf thing is, you'd hardly know it. It's crazy. In fact, I've got mountains out the back of my window. You're more likely to go skiing here than you are to surf.
Yeah, we all feel really bad for you. How far are you from how far are you from Joshua Tree, which is a really beautiful?
Well, that's probably about another 60 miles in the other direction.
Have you been there?
I would guess. No, we're heading out there this weekend. We're going to go and see Noah Purifoy's sculpture garden.
Oh man, Okay, I'm jealous. That sounds good.
No, it's
it sounds
gonna
really
be good, good and weird.
All right. Hey, David, so you and I, well, later on, I have a discussion with Jen Cooper. We're going to talk about the U.S. women's national team. They start up, well, today, by the time you're hearing this, they start up qualifying for the Olympics, which is a big deal.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, sort of like a ticket to go to the land of Zika, which is kind of scary. But otherwise, they're going to be competing to go down and play. You and I are going to talk about the 77th minute walkout of Liverpool fans this past weekend. That is, you know, this is what you missed. In this podcast, we missed you because we didn't have anybody to just sort of, you know, tell us about the old traditions of English soccer and how they're butting up against the modern day. But here we go. We'll have that coming up. David Goldblatt. Yes, I'm so excited to have you back, David.
Pleased to be with you, dude.
Okay, so this is George from the future. Well, I guess the past, if you're listening to this, but the future relative to when David and I recorded. And apparently, Liverpool has reversed its ticket pricing policies. You can go and read the entire letter. The Guardian has reproduced it, and we have a link to that on our show page. So just go check that out if you're curious. I think the conversation between David and I is still interesting about it's now about a successful fan protest, which is pretty cool. Okay, David, last weekend, 77th minute, 10,000 Liverpool fans walked out of Anfield protesting high ticket prices. I mean, ticket prices are high, right? I mean,
ticket prices are astronomically high. I mean, you know, this, I suspect with £1,000, which is what, like a $1,300 annual season ticket at Anfield, we're now in the range of 1,500%, 2,000% inflation after taking account price inflation generally. In the increasing cost of a season ticket at Liverpool since the advent of the Premier League. And I'm just not sure it's 2,000% better, good as it is.
So Anfield, break this down for us a little bit, because I think American fans probably, you know, at least I definitely think of stadiums, and I think, okay, big NFL-style stadiums, you know, that's the equivalent. It's really not like that. A place like Anfield is old. It's been around for a long time. You know, it wasn't built to sort of like really, I guess, maximize the profits you make from a fan coming in the gate.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I mean, so what are these fans? We think of owners these days in the U.S. like building these newfangled giant stadiums with all these luxuries and amenities, and you know, just charging a ton of money. But it must look even more ridiculous over there, where you're sitting in this damp, old building that's sort of, you know, you got like your view is obstructed and you're cold and like you're peeing on the floor or something. And
I mean, all of that is absurd, but the sort of wider economics of it are completely absurd, George. When you've got a situation where ticket, you know, match day income from tickets, you know, is now probably less than a quarter, probably down to 20% and declining of the overall income of these clubs. I mean, the latest television deal is so astronomically large, you know, that every single ticket could be free in the Premier League this season, and they would still have more money than they did under the old deal. Now, I'm not advocating that that's where all of the new money from this extraordinary television deal should go. But it seems to me absurd that alongside that, you're also then putting up the prices of these tickets at precisely the time when the age of your audience is continuing to go up, and when the quality of the atmosphere more often than not is disappointing. And you're just going to drive out more of the core supporters who make the noise, who make the atmosphere, who are the club. If you do this, I just think it's incredibly short-sighted, unbelievably venal.
David, that gets at an interesting point, which is, you know, soccer on TV is now the main product, right? It's not soccer in the stadium. That's not what they're really selling.
Absolutely.
That's necessary to sell the TV product. And so, you know, it seems to me short-sighted that teams would, you know, price out the most passionate supporters and really, you know, create a much more anemic atmosphere
exactly.
for themselves.
What you should be doing is the contrary. Is you should be subsidizing them, and particularly away fans. You know, and I think it's interesting that this is Liverpool. Of course, its sort of status, both as fans and clubs in English football, is immense. But it's actually quite a conservative tradition of fan support in Liverpool. There have been very few protests over the years over the owners of the club or the direction of the club.
The story I read said it was the first walkout in 132 years.
I mean, exactly, though this has been building. I mean, Spirit of Shankly Which is the kind of, you know, autonomous fan organization founded 4 or 5 years ago to campaign on precisely these issues, has been doing ticket price protests inside and outside Anfield now for 2 years. There was a really good one about this time actually last season, I think, when they announced the ticket hikes last year, where they had a series of banners at the front of the Kop showing the increase in ticket prices as you go through the Premier League years. And you know, there's a really great quote by Rogan Taylor, who's an academic at John Moores University, active in the fan movement, who describes the crowd as Anfield and saying it's not, you know, a lot of these are not middle-class folks. These are not comfortable folks. These are people who are still coming, but this is really, really biting into their leisure budget. You know, they're going without other things. And this is sort of 10 years ago he's writing this.
Right.
And I think we've reached a crisis point. And I think, you know, charging that level of those sort of tickets for disabled supporters as well, it's like, oh, it's just sort of taking the mickey.
Yeah, so the 10,000 fans at £77 a ticket, which is what they were protesting, that was announced last week. That represents £770,000 walking out of the stadium at that point, which is, it's crazy to hear you say that that's not significant to the club, though, because that's just a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
Well, you know, but in the overall scheme of things, I mean, you've just got to look at the kind of the budget sheets of these of these clubs. Under the last television deal, I mean, match day income is particularly important for the really the clubs who are kitted out for this. So Arsenal and Manchester United make a phenomenal amount of money from the kind of expensive banqueting and the really expensive seats. Liverpool, you know, doesn't have such a large upper middle class or kind of business class that can sustain those sort of ticket prices. So in a way, it's, you know, they bring in less money. And even in those sort of, you know, huge, even where they're bringing in absolutely racks of cash, it's still under a third and heading south as the television deals go up. I mean, and the TV deals, this is not over, right? This is going to be renegotiated, what, in 3 or 4 years? I mean, the Premier League is eventually going to kind of recoup, I imagine, the extraordinary wealth that will be available from the global audiences it has built in the last 10-15 years. I mean, at the moment, African TV rights are, you know, a chicken feed in the scheme of things. But it won't be long before the size and the value of the Nigerian television market will be astronomical. And there is more of this to come. There is absolutely no need to raise ticket prices to these levels, you know, to...
So, David, you're
going to kill it later on down the line.
I mean, I agree. So is that the best argument against people who say, well, it's the free market, let it determine the ticket prices, this is how capitalism works?
Oh, since when was this a free market? I mean, this is just an absurd thing to say by people who don't know anything about economics. It's like defying your terms. Really, rational consumers who can choose between a variety of options when it comes to supporting football clubs, the entire rational choice model on which these, you know, pathetic arguments stand disintegrates at that point. The unit of analysis isn't the club anyway, it's a league. It's run not by profit maximizers, but by utility maximizers. You know, this is like, please, this is just, you know, kindergarten nonsense from ideologues who are defending their own private interests, you know, in capital accumulation. Please, I don't even want to begin that argument, it's so absurd. You know, if it were not for the fact that anyway, what they're selling is a whole bunch of cultural capital that they inherited by, you know, that they have bought in effect by stealth. I mean, I still maintain the fact that they have effectively bought stolen goods, because the value of contemporary clubs is based on a kind of, you know, a century of cultural capital, narratives, meaning and symbols that actually give them value and interest. And who's paying up for that? And who's going to reproduce it?
So let's wrap this up, David. You know, we've seen sort of snifflings of this over the last decade. You know, I don't know. I guess I'm just sort of a little bit skeptical that anything like this can work. But maybe in a year when Bernie Sanders won a primary, anything like this is possible.
It's interesting. You know, I mean, as ever, we have a choice. You know, people have a choice. It can, you know, change can happen. People can organize. The Football Supporters Federation in England, I think, is becoming better and more organised. That linking, you know, an event like this at Liverpool to wider protests at other clubs and drawing support. You
Well, let me
know,
ask you about that.
let's say.
Let me ask you about that, David. So we have listeners mostly in the U.S., but let's say somebody is sympathetic to this, you know, the plight of these Liverpool fans who are being priced out of the stadium.
Yeah.
How can they most effectively support what they're doing? I mean, by turning off the TV, that seems like a huge bummer. But
I think ask Spirit of Shankly. Follow them on Twitter. Follow them on Facebook. Check in with the Football Supporters Federation and find out what's going on. Ask them. Is what I would say. You know, we've got, this is the joy of social networks.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, David, this is great. I'm really so glad to have you back.
Pleasure.
In the orbit. How is your, what's the status of your Olympics book?
I'm going through the final run through, filling a few holes and then trying to work out what my conclusion is. So I reckon by the end of February, I shall be done.
Dude,
just in time to engage with the FIFA Congress.
Yes.
Hooray.
All right. We will have, I want to handicap some of the people running for FIFA president soon with you. So
we'll
that.
Speak soon.
All right, David, thanks.
And pleasure. We'll talk to you soon. See right. ya. Bye.
Okay, if you don't know who Jen Cooper is, then something is obviously wrong with you because she, her excellent, excellent, excellent Mixed Zone podcast shows up in the same podcast feed as Dummy every week, and you should be listening to it because it's fantastic. Jen, welcome to Dummy.
Thanks.
I'm glad we can cross over.
Thanks, George. Always like being a guest on Dummy.
Good. Okay, good. So, okay, you're here because there is some women's soccer stuff coming up that only you can tell us about in your inimitable way. What is going on this week in Houston, Texas, where you live?
So much women's soccer stuff going on. There are going to be 9 women's soccer matches in 10 days.
Smother me with the women's soccer content.
In my hometown, and another 6 matches up I-45 in Dallas. So we've got women's Olympic qualifying. It's the final round of women's Olympic qualifying for CONCACAF. You've got 8 teams competing for 2 berths in Rio. The Olympic tournament, much smaller than the Women's World Cup, just 12 teams. So competition's even tougher, and a very different U.S. roster going into this qualifying tournament. You know, a lot of us thought, okay, it's going to be so tough for Jill Ellis to cut a few people off this roster, and then suddenly spaces were opening up left and right. I mean, aside from the retirements, you have Christy Rampone out with injury, Megan Rapinoe out with injury, 2 pregnancies announced last month, and some up-and-comers really, really making their mark. So it's going to be a much different tournament than I thought it was going to be.
I want to ask you about the tournament itself, the qualifying tournament. But first, let's talk about that turnover on the U.S. team. I mean, that's something that I think fans of the men's team are sort of wanting to see a little bit more of. But pregnancy doesn't seem to be an option for getting Jermaine Jones out of there. at least the way
yet.
Medicine stands in 2016. Yeah. So who's missing from this roster that is sort of a notable name that we would know? And then I want you to follow that up with new additions that we should be paying attention to.
So missing from the forward line, you've got both Sydney LaRue and Amy Rodriguez out expecting children. And it's kind of funny because on my old women's team, we used to call pregnancy the forward's disease. So clearly, it's a forward's disease. So Amy,
well, mazel tov to
that.
Yeah.
Amy Rodriguez out, Sydney LaRue out. You also have, you know, like I mentioned, Rampone and Rapinoe with those injuries. And then you throw in the retirements, you know, that were all feted last fall. So Abby Wambach, Lauren Holiday, Shannon Box, Lori Kolupny. It's a big turnover. And then you have some people that were left off this roster who are still current in the U.S. women's national team pool. It doesn't mean they can't make the Olympics, but either Jill didn't want them for qualifying or thinks she knows what they can provide and wanted to give, you know, some youngsters room for qualifying. So Heather O'Reilly, Whitney Engen,
wow,
not on this roster. Now, the newbies coming in all look very exciting. Emily Sonnet, number 1 overall pick for the NWSL draft, going to Portland Thorns. She's only played 4 or 5 caps yet, already looks really comfortable, you know, pairing in the center back. You've got Stephanie McCaffrey coming out of the Boston Breakers. scored in her first cap against Brazil, no less. And then, of course, the 17-year-old Mallory Pugh, she got her first cap and her first goal last month against Ireland. And the rumor was at the time was that she was going to skip college, not play at UCLA, and actually go straight to NWSL. But her father actually came out and said, no, she's going to go to college. But some very exciting changes on this team that I think many of us thought we weren't going to see until after the 2016 cycle was over.
Right. All right. That's excellent. So, and what about Lindsay Horan? She hasn't played a huge role with the national team yet, but she seems to be coming up a little stronger. In fact, they gave her they turned over U.S. Women's National Team Twitter to her the other day, and it made me feel so old watching her tweet some of these things. I was like, wow.
Yeah, that happens to me a lot when they let the young kids take over Twitter. She got her first cap under Tom Sormani in 2013, and then, you know, having made the decision to play at PSG instead of collegiately in the U.S., I mean, she was kind of, she was kind of frozen out of the national team pool. Mm-hmm. But she made the decision. She wanted to come back. She'll be playing with Portland Thorns, of course. And she had several caps this fall and just looked so natural in that midfield position, even though historically she's been a forward. She was looking so good. The game in San Antonio, she assisted on, I think, two of Kristen Press's three goals and then gets her own first international goal. I mean, she's looking so good in that midfield. She could be, you know, the solution to everyone's like, okay, Lauren Holliday has retired. What is Jill Ellis going to do? It's like, well, there you go, Lindsay Horan.
Right. Is Carly Lloyd now the undisputed sort of leader of this team? I mean, now that Abby Wambach's gone, I mean, and after the season, the year she had last year, I mean, who's going to take that away?
Right. And I think Jill made a wise decision of making co-captains. I think that's always a good plan to have co-captains so that it was Carly and Becky Sauerbrunn. So you've got a combination of, you know, your hardcore power forward and your quiet but amazingly intelligent center back, you know. So I think that's a great partnership.
All right. So take us through qualifying. You were telling me earlier that the setup is a little bit weird because CONCACAF doesn't seed its team. So we have some lopsided groups.
Yeah. It's not even specific to CONCACAF. Sometimes, I mean, I've seen Olympic tournaments where they only seeded the host and the defending champ and not anyone else.
Listen, Jen, you don't pass up a chance to blame CONCACAF. We'll have to cut that.
Yes, I can blame CONCACAF for many things.
Right.
They only seeded USA and Canada, whereas I would have seeded at least the four teams that qualified for the Women's World Cup, you know, the most number of CONCACAF teams you've ever had in a Women's World Cup. But they didn't, so you end up in one group, USA, Mexico, Costa Rica, with poor little Puerto Rico, who for the first time has reached this round of qualifying, only to be, you know, playing against three big guns. And then Canada gets what would normally be, I would say, the USA's group, where Canada gets Guatemala, Guyana, and Trinidad and Tobago.
Ooh, so yeah, so it looks, and you were saying that the top two teams coming out of this qualify. So it looks like it's probably going to be Canada on one side. And I mean, if Costa Rica or Mexico can squeak by the U.S., then they would get it. But it looks like it's probably going to be Canada versus U.S. in the final. And then both of those teams would qualify.
Right. But they do semifinals. So top two from each of the group of four advance. You know, so that means that Canada will have a decent semifinal opponent, likely
Costa
Rica or Mexico. The U.S., their semifinal opponent is Guatemala, Guyana, or Trinidad and Tobago. And I don't mean any disrespect to those teams. I just think if you want to have the best chance of having your best teams in the Olympics, you take your strongest four programs and make sure they're separated among two groups.
Yeah. Who's coaching Trinidad these days?
It's someone actually from the island. Randy Waldrum stepped down a few weeks ago, or rather was pushed out roughly, however you want to say.
Oh, really?
It. Yeah.
So he was doing double duty as, you know, Dash and Trinidad coach.
Right. And they...
Which was so cool.
He had gone back and forth. A new president was elected for the Trinidad Federation, I think, in December. And he had made it clear that he really wanted someone local. And Randy said, well, then it doesn't make any sense for me to stay on, as much, even though the players were like, please, 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 Randy, stay on. And so the president of the federation just said, well, you can do qualifying, but we don't want you after that. And Randy said, well, it doesn't make sense for me to do qualifying. You would, you know, you should do right. the new coach. So I know Randy's actually looking forward to just sitting in the stands in Houston, watching his players and cheering for his players.
Yeah. And so we shouldn't write Trinidad off. I mean, they came within a game or within a series of qualifying for the World Cup as well. So that'll be interesting on in that group. Yeah. And then Jen, tell me, you know, a little plug for yourself. You're putting on something, a little conference, WOSOCO.
WOSOCO. Yeah. That's my new addition to the American soccer lexicon. So you have the semifinals on the 19th and the final on the 21st, all in Houston. So I thought, hey, there's going to be a lot of U.S. soccer fans traveling to Houston. There won't be anything to do Saturday. So me and Hal Kaiser from the Keeper Notes website put together just, you know, some simple and informational fun sessions for women's soccer fans. So I'm going to do a presentation on the history of the U.S. women's national team with visuals, of course. And Hal is going to do kind of a
puppets,
yeah,
right?
Puppets. I like that.
I heard. Okay.
Hal's going to do a kind of NWSL roster 101, because we get so many questions as people who cover the league regularly. It's like, wait, why did this team get this person's rights? Or why would the Dash trade Megan Klingenberg? And what is a discovery player? And much like MLS, NWSL has done an amazing job of coming up with rules on the fly, changing rules behind the scenes, not making rules clear until after the fact. So we thought it would be a great, like, okay, this is how you build a roster. These are the constraints you're dealing with, or this is why this player didn't need an international spot.
And that's a virtual reality presentation.
Yeah, something like that. And okay. Then we'll have a Q&A at the end. We have Kaylee Ohai from the Houston Dash. She'll be a special guest. I almost have Monica Gonzalez confirmed. She's just trying to work out, you know, the airplane ticket from Houston, mm-hmm. from Mexico City to Houston, and working on getting one more special women's soccer guest just for, you know, the fans to enjoy. It's like, you know, to ask questions of, but then of course also to get their autograph. So it's just 3.5 hours, and we've got some actual special prizes donated. So we'll do a drawing, of course, because people who know me know that I can't help but doing kind of sharing the soccer swag.
Yeah. And so people who want to know more can go to keepernotes.com.
Right. And there's a tab that says WOSOCO, and that's just WOSOCO, standing for Women's Soccer Conference.
Excellent. All right. Jen Cooper, the keeper, the host of Howler's wonderful women's soccer podcast, The Mix Zone. Thank you so much for joining me. Appreciate it.
Thanks, George.
All right. That is it for today's show. I want to thank David Goldblatt. It's so good to have you back. I want to thank Jen Cooper. Really, you need to go listen to her podcast. We purposely didn't talk about the U.S. soccer preemptive lawsuit against the U.S. women's national team, which is a super interesting topic right now, because she covered it so well in her previous podcast, and I want to get you guys to listen to it. So if you're interested about that and you're wondering, well, how come they talked about the U.S. women's team and they didn't talk about this giant, giant issue, it's because you can go right now and hit listen on Mix Zone, the latest Mix Zone, and hear Jen Cooper's great analysis of that issue. Let's see. I want to thank our producers, Ryan Katniss and Wes Burdine. They get help from Nick Jansen and Faisal Sikdar. Oh, go and sign up for the Goalmouth email. Ah, it's so funny. You're going to have a chance to win those two jerseys. You just need to think of a little soccer love poem. Send it to us with the hashtag HowlerVCard through Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, and you will be in the running. And then go and vote. Get all your friends to sign up for this email so they can vote too, and you will win a set of jerseys for you and a loved one from World Soccer Shop. My name is George Gracie. I'll be back next week with, Bobby's going to be back. We know that. And he promises to tell the story next week of where he's been the last 3 weeks. It's an interesting tale. But my name is George Gracie. I'll be back. And I want you to remember that when you listen to Dummy, you will never listen alone.